Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today we'll discuss the article by Fisher et al. Titled, Diving and Exercise, the Interaction of Trigeminal Receptors and Muscle Metaboreceptors on Muscle Sympathetic Nerve Activity in Humans. This article published in the March 1st, 2015 issue. My guests today are guest editor Nisha Charkoudian, lead author James Fisher, and content expert Jelko Duwidge. Let's get started.
Thanks, Kara. Humans and other mammals are able to spend certain periods of time underwater, even though we naturally breathe air. Some mammals, such as seals, are able to spend prolonged periods of time underwater due to the so-called diving reflex, which decreases heart rate and causes peripheral vasoconstriction. This autonomic reflex is thought to help minimize the use of oxygen for that period of time during which the animal is submerged. Humans also exhibit a diving reflex, although less pronounced compared to other species. In the present study, Fisher and colleagues sought to evaluate how the sympathetic nervous system activation associated with the diving reflex interacts with the reflexes associated with exercise. To start with, James, could you tell us a little more about the significance of the diving reflex in humans and how this reflex can be elicited in a laboratory setting?
Okay, thanks, Nisha. When the face is immersed in cold water, there's an increase in cardiac parasympathetic activity and an increase in sympathetic activity both to the heart and the peripheral vasculature. And the idea here is that there is a reduction in blood flow then to the peripheral vasculature, to skeletal muscle, skin, and also a reduction in cardiac output and cardiac work. And through this combination of factors, the diving response serves as an oxygen-conserving reflex. So the significance of this has been debated somewhat in humans, but clearly in animals, it's very strongly manifests and allows them to dive for some very impressive durations. With respect to how we might evoke it in the laboratory setting, the easiest way is simply to immerse the face in a tank of cold water. In the present study, participants were lying on their back supine. We used ice packs placed on the face. And the other difference between the two methods, I suppose, is that because the apnea associated with the breath hold and facial immersion can have a response, by just placing the ice packs, you can continue to pace the participants' breathing rate and depth effectively and kind of distinguish between the facial immersion effect and specifically the trigeminal stimulation.
Great. And could you tell us a little bit about the results of your study?
What we were really interested in doing was seeing how these autonomic responses to the diving response were modified during exercise. So, as I mentioned, we applied the ice packs to the face to evoke trigeminal nerve stimulation. We made direct recordings of sympathetic nerve activity to the skeletal muscle vasculature using the microneurography at the peroneal nerve. And when we performed this, we saw about 300% increase in sympathetic activity, so quite a profound, strong response. And then we compared that response to the responses evoked by isometric hand grip, and then isometric hand grip combined with the trigeminal stimulation. And what we were trying to look at there was the interaction. So the question is it a 300% response with the trigeminal stimulation, a 300% increase, for example, with the hand grip? And when you do the both together, do you get a 600% increase? And as it happened, what we found was that the response to the combined trigeminal nerve stimulation and hand grip was just the same as either on their own.
Thank you, James. Jelko, you've spent quite a bit of time with elite divers in Croatia, and these divers have performed amazing feats of underwater performance. You've also performed similar muscle sympathetic nerve measurements in elite divers. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about your experience with those athletes and how that relates to the results of the present study.
Thank you, Nisha, first for the invitation to participate in AJP Heart podcast as the first physiologist from Croatia. The results of James' work are important in analysis of interaction between diving response, that of course includes co-activation of parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous system, and exercise that increases sympathetic nervous system activity. Jamie's results are mostly applicable, related to some kind of application, is to swimming in cold water, because cold phase stimulation was used as to stimulate trigeminal nerve. Regarding results, I was surprised to see that there was no additive effect on muscle sympathetic nervous activity when facial cooling was combined with hand grip or post-exercise ischemia. And this was suggested to be a mechanism by Jamie about synaptic occlusion. Maybe it will be worthwhile in the future to investigate longer duration and maybe higher intensity of the hand grip, since MSNA responses depend on the level of exercise intensity. As you have pointed out, Nisha, now I am coming back to these elite breath hold divers. These are really amazing athletes that really stretch the physiological limits to the maximum. Just for example, these athletes can sustain so-called static apnea, which is a face-down immersion in the water, for 11 minutes and 25 seconds by being conscious, which is a world current record for males. Our study done a few years ago, where we did the maximal apneas lasting around 4 minutes, we have seen increases in MSNA up to 2,000% from the baseline in elite divers, versus control subjects that showed the increase around 500%. And mean arterial pressure was increased for about 40 to 50%. Actually, we have shown that massive sympathetic excitation during this maximal apnea leads to recruitment and activation of the large and sympathetic neurons, similarly like in the motor system. In our subjects, we have not seen a ceiling effect in either MSNA or mean arterial pressure changes.
Jelko, thank you. That was very helpful information, and I've always found it very fascinating, that the population of divers that you work with. James, do you have any comments on the range of possible sympathoexcitation in your study and in potential future studies?
One of the potential explanations for our data when we combined these two stimuli was that we were reaching a ceiling effect. Personally, I didn't feel that that was the case either. We've made recordings from patients with heart failure, for example. They exhibit much higher burst frequencies than we saw. And I mean, I take the point about the hand grip exercise intensity. And again, if you were to do a more robust, a higher intensity of hand grip for a longer duration, I expect that the sympathetic responses would be even greater there. So I think there still is some reserve, some sympathetic reserve there, that if it was recruited, it could have been manifest, essentially.
Thanks, James. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the concept of synaptic occlusion.
So we believe our findings are representative of synaptic occlusion. So essentially, the sympathetic responses to the trigeminal nerve stimulation, either alone or in combination with the hand grip or the post-hand grip ischemia, were equivalent. And on the basis of such human investigations, it's difficult to fully know exactly what's going on with these central neural pathways. But clearly, we are activating very different receptor pathways. But they do seem to demonstrate some high degree of convergence here on these neural circuits that are controlling the cardiovascular neurons, in that the efferent outflow is equivalent under all of those conditions. So with respect to real-world applications, as it were, the swimmer, it may be important in limiting the degree of peripheral vasoconstrictor tone when exercise and submersion are combined, such as in the diver here. And this may limit the potential increases in blood pressure and thus cardiac work.
Right. Thank you, James. That's very helpful. Jelko, I was wondering if you have any additional thoughts about kind of the real-world applications or applications for someone, let's say, that who isn't very athletic and is thinking about getting into some kind of water sport activity.
Thank you, Nisha. Of course, translation of these findings from the Jamie's work to clinical world of cardiovascular disease will be very, very next step. Because working with the either young, fairly fit males as used in this study versus our elite divers, both groups can sustain large perturbation in major cardiovascular variables without any clinical manifestations. For example, we have shown in scuba divers significant asymptomatic deterioration in cardiac function, arterial endothelial dysfunction, acute pulmonary edema, increased pulmonary artery pressure lasting for a few hours to a few days. But what happens to cardiovascularly compromised patients related to immersion in submersion or doing scuba diving is really a big question. Related to trigeminal nerve stimulation, nowadays in swimming, but also in diving, it is really minimized by thermally isolated suits. So in generally, it should not be a big problem that facial cool stimulation is present for recreational divers or swimmers.
Shelko, thank you. I think those are very important points, both for healthy athletic people as well as with regard to various clinical populations. I'd like to thank James Fisher and Jelko Duic for joining us for this AJP Heart podcast. Kara?
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circ podcast. For more podcasts, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.